I have finally arrived at Little Compton, and at this moment am sitting in the dining hall of the Rose Garden Hotel, having recently finished lunch. Outside, the rain is falling steadily. Of course, the possibility has occurred to me that I might set off now to meet Miss Kenton, but then in my letter I informed her I would be calling at 3 o'clock, and I do not think it wise to surprise her by arriving any earlier. I have ascertained from the young woman who served me lunch that the address where Miss Kenton is presently residing is some 15 minutes' walk away, which implies I have at least another 40 minutes to wait. This present downpour is something of a surprise, since the day started with the bright morning sunshine I have been blessed with each morning since leaving Darlington Hall, and with Dr. Carlyle calling by at 7:30 as promised, I was able to take my leave of the tailors before any further embarrassing conversations had had a chance to develop. We exchanged a few pleasantries as we climbed a narrow road between tall trees, and then he said, quite abruptly, "I say, I hope you don't think me very rude, but you aren't a manservant of some sort, are you?" I must confess my overwhelming feeling on hearing this was one of relief. "I am indeed, sir. In fact, I am the butler of Darlington Hall near Oxford."
"Thought so. All that about having met Winston Churchill and so on."
"It wasn't my intention to deceive anyone, sir."
"Oh, no need to explain, old fellow. I can quite see how it happened." The doctor gave a hearty laugh. "Must do one good to be mistaken for a lord every now and then. And what did you make of the citizens of Moscombe?"
"Very engaging, sir."
"So what were they all telling you about last night?"
"I believe Mr. Smith was stressing the importance of his campaigning work in the village."
"Ah, yes. Sounds like Harry Smith."
"Excuse me for asking, sir, but may I take it Mr. Smith is considered something of a comic figure?"
"Oh, that's taking it a little too far, I'd say. People do have a political conscience of sorts here, but they want a quiet life. Harry has a lot of ideas about changes to this and that, but really people here don't want to be bothered with this issue and that issue."
"Mr. Smith seemed to be of the view," I said, "that a person's dignity rested on such things, having strong opinions and such." Mr. Carlyle nodded, but seemed to have become immersed in his own thoughts. "You know, Mr. Stevens," he said eventually, "when I first came out here, I was a committed socialist. Socialism would allow people to live with dignity. That's what I believed when I came out here." He turned to me cheerily. "What about you, old chap? What do you think dignity's all about?"
"It's rather a hard thing to explain in a few words, sir," I said. "But I suspect it comes down to not removing one's clothing in public."
It was around 9 o'clock that I crossed the border into Cornwall. Many of the sights that greeted me this morning were among the most charming I have so far encountered. It was unfortunate, then, that I could not give to them the attention they warranted, for one was in a condition of some preoccupation with the thought that one would be meeting Miss Kenton again before the day's end. So it was that while speeding along between large open fields, I found myself turning over certain recollections from the past, and now, as I sit here in Little Compton, I am unable to prevent my mind from continuing to wander along these same tracks. One memory has preoccupied me all morning. It is a recollection of standing alone in the back corridor before the closed door of Miss Kenton's parlour, transfixed by indecision as to whether or not I should knock. For I had been struck by the conviction that behind that very door, Miss Kenton was in fact crying. This memory has remained firmly embedded in my mind, as has the memory of the peculiar sensation I felt rising within me as I stood there like that. However, I am not at all certain now as to the actual circumstances which had led me to be standing thus in the back corridor. I may well have asserted that this memory derived from the minutes immediately after Miss Kenton's receiving news of her aunt's death, but now I believe I may have been a little confused about this matter. That, in fact, this fragment of memory derives from events that took place on an evening at least a few months after the death of Miss Kenton's aunt, when the young Mr. Cardinal turned up at Darlington Hall rather unexpectedly. Mr. Cardinal had been building something of a name for himself as a columnist,
specialising in witty comments on international affairs. His lordship never forgot that the young man was his godson and always treated him as kin. At the same time, it had never been Mr. Cardinal's habit to turn up to dinner without any prior warning, and I was thus a little surprised when, on answering the door that evening, I found him standing there, his briefcase cradled in both arms. "Oh, hello, Stevens, how are you?" he said. "Just happened to be in a bit of a jam tonight and wondered if Lord Darlington would put me up for the night." "It's very nice to see you again, sir. I shall tell his lordship you are here." I left Mr. Cardinal in the drawing-room and made my way to the study, where I found his lordship working through some pages with a look of deep concentration. When I told him of Mr. Cardinal's arrival, a look of surprised annoyance crossed his face. "Tell Mr. Cardinal I'll be down shortly," he said finally. "He can amuse himself for a little while." It was not long after this, I recall, that I went down to Miss Kenton's parlour. She was sitting at her table, though there was nothing before her, and her hands were empty. "Mr. Cardinal is here, Miss Kenton," I said. "He'll be requiring his usual room tonight." "Very good, Mr. Stevens. I shall see to it before I leave." "Ah, you are going out this evening, Miss Kenton." "I am indeed, Mr. Stevens. You will recall we discussed this a fortnight ago." "Yes, of course, Miss Kenton. I beg your pardon. It had just slipped my mind for the moment." "Mr. Stevens, I have something to tell you. It concerns my acquaintance, who I am going to meet tonight." "Yes, Miss Kenton?" "He has asked me to marry him."
"Indeed, Miss Kenton. That is very interesting."
"I am still giving the matter thought." She glanced down at her hands. "My acquaintance is to start a job in the West Country as of next month. I thought you should be informed of the situation."
"I am very grateful, Miss Kenton. I do hope you have a pleasant evening. Now, if you will excuse me." It must have been 20 minutes or so later that I encountered Miss Kenton again. I was halfway up the back staircase when I heard the sound of angry footsteps rattling the floorboard somewhere below me. Turning, I saw Miss Kenton glaring up at me from the foot of the stairs.
"Mr. Stevens, do I understand that you are wishing me to remain on duty this evening?"
"Not at all, Miss Kenton."
"Do you imagine that by creating so much commotion in the kitchen and by stamping back and forth like this outside my parlour, you will get me to change my mind?"
"Miss Kenton, there is absolutely no reason why you should not go out this evening."
"I intend to go, with or without your blessing, Mr. Stevens."
"Indeed, Miss Kenton. And once again, I would wish you a very pleasant evening." At almost precisely 8:30, there came the sound of motor cars pulling up in the courtyard. The next moment I was showing in 2 very distinguished gentlemen. 10 minutes later came the sound of another car, and I opened the door to Herr Ribbentrop, the German ambassador, by now no stranger to Darlington Hall. His lordship emerged to meet him, and the 2 gentlemen appeared to exchange complicit glances before disappearing together into the drawing-room. Thereafter I took up my position out in the hall, and was not obliged to move from it again until some 2 hours later, when the back doorbell was rung. On descending, I discovered a police constable standing there with Miss Kenton, requesting that I verify the latter's identity. As I was bolting the door, I noticed Miss Kenton waiting for me and said, "I trust you had a pleasant evening, Miss Kenton." "Are you not in the least interested in what took place tonight between my acquaintance and I, Mr. Stevens?"
"I do not mean to be rude, Miss Kenton, but I really must return upstairs. Events of a global significance are taking place in this house at this very moment."
"When are they not, Mr. Stevens?" "Very well. If you must be rushing off, I shall just tell you that I accepted my acquaintance's proposal."
"Then may I offer you my congratulations?"
"Thank you, Mr. Stevens. I will be happy to serve out my notice. However, should it be that you are able to release me earlier, we would be very grateful."
"I will do my best to secure a replacement at the earliest opportunity, Miss Kenton." I started to walk away, but then I heard Miss Kenton say, "Mr. Stevens," and thus turned once more.
"Am I to take it," she said,
that after the many years of service I have given in this house, you have no more words to greet the news of my possible departure than those you have just uttered. Miss Kenton, you have my warmest congratulations. Now you will please excuse me. I ascended to the hall and took up my position again. However, before 5 minutes had passed, Mr. Cardinal appeared in the doorway of the library and beckoned me over. "You know, Stevens," he said, "I always look forward to a little chat with you whenever I come here. Won't you care to join me in a little drink?"
"That's very kind of you, sir, but no, thank you, I won't."
"I say, Stevens, are you all right there? Not feeling unwell, are you?"
"A little tired, perhaps, but I'm perfectly fine, thank you, sir."
"I do wish you'd sit down, Stevens."
I put down my tray and seated myself in an appropriate posture on the armchair Mr. Cardinal was indicating. He heaved a sigh. Then he said,
"I hardly need to tell you, do I, Stevens, what I feel towards his lordship? I mean to say he's been like a second father to me. I care deeply for him. But let's face facts. His lordship is in deep waters. I'm getting very anxious."
"Is that so, sir?"
"Do you know, Stevens, what is going on here?"
"I'm afraid not, sir."
"The British Prime Minister and the German ambassador are brought together by your employer for secret talks in the night, and you're not even curious?"
"Well, I tell you this, Stevens, his lordship is being made a fool of."
"I'm sorry, sir, I have failed to notice any such developments." "Haven't you even had the smallest suspicion that Herr Hitler has been manoeuvring his lordship just as easily as he manoeuvres any of his other pawns back in Berlin? His lordship is a gentleman, and it's his instinct to offer generosity and friendship to a defeated foe. And you must have seen it, Stevens, the way they've used it, manipulated it, turned something fine and noble into something they can use for their own foul ends."
Mr. Cardinal was staring at the floor.
Then he said, "I remember coming here years ago, and there was this American chap here, and he pointed at his lordship and called him an amateur. Well, I have to say, Stevens, that chap was quite right. Today's world is too foul a place for fine and noble instinct. His lordship has been trying to persuade the Prime Minister himself to accept an invitation to visit Herr Hitler."
"I'm sorry, sir, but I have to say that I have every trust in his lordship's good judgment."
"Oh, dear, now. I've really offended you."
"Not at all, sir. Oh, I appear to be required by the gentleman. Please excuse me." In the drawing room, his lordship instructed me to bring up a certain exceptionally fine bottle of port from the cellar. As I approached Miss Kenton's door on the return journey, I saw from the light seeping round its edges that she was still within. And that was the moment, I am now sure, that has remained so persistently lodged in my memory. That moment as I paused in the dimness of the corridor, an ever-growing conviction mounting within me that just a few yards away Miss Kenton was crying. I remember being quite certain that were I to knock and enter, I would discover her in tears. I do not know how long I remained standing there. At the time it seemed a significant period, but in reality I suspect it was only a few seconds. For, of course, I was required to hurry upstairs to serve some of the most distinguished gentlemen of the land, and I cannot imagine I would have delayed unduly.